Francis sought occasion to love God in everything. He delighted in all the works of God's hands, and from the vision of joy on earth, his mind soared aloft to the life-giving source and cause of all. In everything beautiful he saw him who is beauty itself, and he followed his beloved everywhere by his likeness imprinted on creation. Of all creation he made a ladder by which he might mount up and embrace him who is all desirable. By the power of his extraordinary faith, he tasted the goodness which is the source of all in each and every created thing, as in so many rivulets. He seemed to perceive a divine harmony in the interplay of powers and faculties given by God to his creatures, and like the prophet David, he exhorted them all to praise God.
Patron saint of creation, patron saint of ecology. Across the world, people have an image of St. Francis wandering through the fields and the forests, talking to the birds, taming the wolf of Gubbio. St. Francis is associated with all that is beautiful in the creation that he loved. But Francis only loved the creatures because they were reflections of their creator. Of course they had value, but that value is because all living things exist and are kept in existence because of an all-loving God, for whom nothing is too small to be unworthy of love. Just as St. Bonaventure wrote that Francis sought occasion to love God in everything, so he also added that he called all created things his brothers and sisters because they had the same origins as he.
His attitude towards creation was simple and direct, as simple as the gaze of a dove. As he considered the universe in his pure spiritual vision, he referred every created thing to the creator of all. He saw God in everything and loved and praised him in all creation. By God's generosity and goodness, he possessed God in everything and everything in God. The realization that everything comes from the same source made him call all created things, no matter how insignificant, his brothers and sisters, because they had the same origins as he.
Yet the Francis who sang with the lark was the same Francis who embraced the leper, who exchanged his fine clothes for those of a beggar, and, with his bowl in his hands, asked for food at the hands of others. Francis has long been associated with the environment and with conservation, yet there are parts of the world where not only are forests disappearing, so are the indigenous peoples. There are very real dangers of human beings with a traditional lifestyle that has stood the test of centuries vanishing into history. Daniela Bessi is an Italian journalist who has recently returned from India, where she spent time with the Adivasi. These are some of the indigenous peoples of the subcontinent whose ancient traditions are endangered as mining activities destroy the forests that have been their livelihood.
It's a complete revelation for me to discover that it was an incredibly beautiful, still very virgin region, totally assaulted by the urge of development. In that case, we are talking about mining, simply because that area happened to be the richest area in India in minerals. The 45%, 47% of all the minerals wealth of India are actually still there.
In fact, the situation is becoming more precarious, as Daniela explains.
Nowadays, the situation is getting even worse because after a certain report delivered almost 2 years ago by one of the major merchant banks in England, the McKinsey, where it was underlined the incredible potential of exploitation of this area, and it was suggested that all the mineral companies of the world should invest directly in that area. Orissa and Jharkhand are now the epicenter of this incredible speculation. Not less than 130 memorandum of understanding for licensing the territories where the Adivasi, the tribal people, still live from millennia.
And how many people are involved?
In the mining?
Yes.
Well, this is a bit difficult to quantify, simply because the 93% of the entire workforce of India is not formalized, so it's very difficult to know exactly how many people work in that area. But just to give you an idea, on a population of 27 million people living in Jharkhand, only the 30% is now tribal, while only 50 years ago it was the 60% tribal and 40% non-tribal, which means that the tribal population is receding fast because the people are forced out from the land and simply forced out from the region. It's not that the minerary companies come with some possibilities of employment because they're not considered up to the standard required for mining. So the very terrible situation is that not only they are possessed by of their territories, forced to migrate, force of migration in cities and so on, and other people come from poorest region, from Bihar, from Uttar Pradesh and so on, to work in the mining sector. But it's very difficult to know exactly how many people work.
Forests are vanishing under the onslaught of mining. Yet, whereas conservationists can become rightly angered by the felling of trees and the destruction of ecosystems, less attention is paid to the people who are also dependent on these ecosystems.
It's not that the mining is a dangerous place, it's simply very invasive. I mean, when a mining company comes, it means that the requirement for a thousand of acres of land inevitably pushes out the villages. It's a problem of displacement that is actually going on everywhere in India and everywhere in the world, as we know.
The indigenous communities, over the passage of many centuries, had learned to live in harmony with their environment. They had been the conservationists throughout millennia, and had gained a unique knowledge and understanding of their environment, as Daniela highlights.
Another problem is that traditionally the population, the tribal population of these areas, were relying completely for their living and also for their health to the forest. They are forest people. They are used to bring from the forests everything they need for food, for and including for health. It was very interesting for me to attend to a very interesting conference that was actually organized by a group of Jesuits who work in the south of the region, in Chaibasa. They established a very lively tribal resource center. And periodically they host the conferences in different sectors. One of them was about herbal health. And it was a very interesting occasion to see many, many groups of women gathering from different Adivasi tribal areas of India, from Rajasthan, from Gujarat, from Madhya Pradesh, from Maharashtra, from Andhra, from Bihar, from many, many regions. There were no less than 16 different languages, some of them not able to communicate directly, so only through the translation in English, which was the only possibility for me to understand a bit better what was going on. And it was incredible, the amount of expertise and knowledge. They spent one full day in the forest. They came back with a lot of different plants and cuttings and herbs and so on. And they were describing the difficulties of shifting from this traditional system where the forest is receding to a so-called allopathic health system that very often doesn't take in account the custom. For example, in some of the tribals, the delivery is not allowed with a midwife, but only at the presence of the husband. And very often the husband is not up to the job, and very often the wife dies for very stupid reasons.
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. We're all familiar with the magnificent opening sentence of St. John's Gospel. Yet, in a way, as Daniela points out, in the beginning of the world as we know it today, there were also people, a people who are disappearing from the face of the earth that they have cherished and tended.
We really have to learn a lot from them because, for me, they are the still contemporary age of an age of man that we assume to be totally past, and instead is there. It's our contemporary. This is the magic of these regions. This is the incredible gift that they can represent for us. I mean, there is an incredible baggage of knowledge that is fantastic. If we go back to the history of the planet, actually, we discovered that millions of years ago, the land itself was, I mean, the whole Earth was divided in two blocks, and one was Gondwana, and was actually the congregation of what is now America Latina, Africa, India, and Australia. So it was, and that was all the block. And only later on there was this shifting of continents and so on. So it's interesting to know that still now, in a place in the middle of India, there is a place called Gondwana, and is actually the land inhabited by the Gonds. The Gonds is another name of an important tribe, one of the most ancient tribes in India.
We began with Francis and Bonaventure. Let Bonaventure and Genesis, the book of all beginnings, have the last word.
If you have men who will exclude any of God's creatures from the shelter of compassion and pity, you will have men who deal likewise with their fellow men. God is everywhere, and at the same time, he is nowhere. God is at the end of the road of conformity to Christ and of ecstatic contemplation. But he's also there on the road, close to the one who searches for him, even in the depths of each creature, and especially in our own depths. In everything and in every event, God is present. God is intimately present to his creatures. The earth is sacred. In consequence, humanity should extend ethics and justice to nature, to all peoples who live on the earth. For in destroying the environment, they destroy their own habitat. The goods of creation are not reduced to the economic interests of humanity alone. They are destined for the universal harmony of all beings. God saw all he had made, and indeed, it was very good.